On today's episode of The Back of the Bird, we sit down with Jack Hanna of the Vegas Desert Dogs and the Philadelphia Water Dogs. Now, we did tape this on Monday. On Tuesday, Paulie was traded to the Buffalo Bandits. Really excited for Paul to chase a championship with Buffalo and really pumped for him for that new beginning. So some of this information is a little bit outdated from when we recorded it, but we also chat about the NIL Player of the Month, some news and notes around the league, and a mini game crossover with the hockey world. Let's get into it. Episode 111 of The Back of the Bird.
Take your first ride and run, baby, run. If you want a sign, this is it. You're mad, your magic, you're as hot as a gun. You want to play with fire, consider this. You'll chase the thrill if it's worth the hit, 'cause you never ever want to work for it. Take your first ride and run, baby, run. You got a spine of steel and a roar of thunder. Yeah, you make me drown, yeah, you're pulling me under.
All right, we're back. Episode 111, Back of the Bird, brought to you by Cottage Springs. We're reunited with the Springsies. We're back. We're renewed. Consider us extended. So we're pumped. We're gonna be doing some more stuff with them too, so keep your eyes out. Get out there and try the old mixer packs. And Paulie, I know you remember this. Tawny, I don't know if this would have been at before your time. I would assume it was drinking wise, but Paulie, you remember the old Molson cold shots?
Oh yeah.
Yeah, and they were just like, they would come with a bullseye on them so that were encouraged to shotgun them. Well, that's what we're – Cottage Springs can't say this, but we can. Go out there and get their Springers. They got like the little cans that are like 7%ers now. And the idea is you go out there and you just shotgun the shit out of those things. So anyone looking to have themselves a little Saturday, Sunday, you know, spring's coming up, weather's going to get warm. Those things don't take up a lot of room in your cooler, but they got 7%. And you can just jam a key inside of it and get the booze in you quickly. That's what we're encouraging here. So go get those.
Yeah, I like that. Everyone else in the alcohol industry, it's all like trying to be Michelob Ultra. It's all like low calorie, light beer. And Springsy's like, fuck that. No. We're making it stronger.
Yeah, we want to get you fucked up.
Calorie, though. It's just more bang for your buck.
Yeah, true. Exactly. So I haven't tasted them yet, but I would imagine they're going to be taste a little stronger. But again, all the more reason to just do the shotgun move. So again, it's been a little bit since we've chatted here, but let's kind of just do our check-ins. Paulie, what's going on with you, buddy?
Nothing, man. Just on a little bye week here, so just enjoying some time with the family, I guess. I mean, not much has changed. Stay-at-home dad, but I told you guys about this today. So, I mean, this is now a couple weeks ago, but just an all-time public gym moment here that I just bodied. So listen to this. Working out, like, again, I got to work out usually later on at night because Dory goes in the morning. I'm at home with the kids. So I'm like working out at like, you know, sometimes 5, 6, whatever. It doesn't matter. So I'm at a Good Life Fitness in Burlington and I'm doing like a, you know, a 3 exercise block or whatever. So I'm doing like a bench press, a chin up, and then like a cable ab thing in between. So I got to go from like the bench press over to like a rack that's got a chin up and a cable. So I do my first 2 sets. No one's there. I got 4 sets to do. I go for my 3rd set. I do my bench, do my chins. I go over the cable and there's a bag sitting there. There's no one around. Again, I have to leave the cable. So anyways, it doesn't matter. So I grab the cable. I start doing my exercise and a girl comes over and she's like, I was using that. So I'm like, yeah, all good. And I'm like, I still have the cable in my hand. I'm like just about to explain that, you know, I've been here for 2 sets already. And I'm like about to put the cable down and explain. She simultaneously is grabbing the cable with the pin. unattaching it out of my hand, putting it back, attaching the rope to it, moving it up, and just starts doing tricep push. And she's got ear pods in, and I'm like literally standing beside her. I'm like, hey, like, you want to like talk about this? I'm like, hey, she's just dialed in. I'm like, hey. And I'm sitting there just like a jackass. I'm like, hey. And she's, nope, just doing it. Won't give me the time of day. I'm like, I can't believe this happened. So I just walk off, tail between my legs, go do it, come back. And then I'm just sitting there waiting for her to finish. So she's like, she's back doing her thing. And I'm like sitting behind her. And I'm just like waiting to like just talk to her. Like, hey, listen, like, you know, it's not the first time two people have used a machine. We can like interchange this. So she finishes and just like runs off. I'm just like, I can't believe this just happened. I'm like, literally, she took the handle out of my hand, unattached it. It was still in my hand. I was like,
you were still holding it?
Swear to God, dude. It was incredible. It was like an out of body experience. Like, it was just like the handle was still in. I just like released from the cable. I'm just like, what is going on here? And then she just bodied me. And then I'm just like, oh, I got to get out of the public gym. This is ridiculous.
Yeah. I could never do it because of that. Like, it's just like, it's so much to manage.
Well, again, you know, it's a busy time, but it's like I say, like, obviously you didn't see me using because I had to leave, but like, you're not entitled to just because you were using it or about to use it. That's only you. Like, it's just public, you know, it's gym courtesy that like, you can work in with someone. You're not going to be working out for 15 minutes straight doing tricep pushdowns. And then to take it out of someone's hand was just like the most incredible thing I've ever seen. I was like, obviously I was super rattled, and I was just like waiting for like a boyfriend to come over and just be like, I was like probably the first time I'm ready to fight someone at a gym. Like, just, I was rattled.
Oh man. That'll throw you off for the rest of the day too.
Oh, it was, I like texted Dory. I was like, so when I was waiting at his taxidermy, I'm like, you'll never know what just happened to me.
You texted Dory like, hey, you need to come fight this girl.
I'll show you the text. She's like, you want me to come? I'm like, yeah, get over here right now and come body this chick. We're fighting. I need someone to fight in my place, and you're the only one that can do it. So get over here, put the kids to bed, leave home, get a babysitter, get over here.
Oh, yeah, or just bring the kids, have them jump in.
Watch. Let them watch.
Have them, yeah, they need to know. And then another funny story. I haven't seen this in a while. So we played in Hamilton, obviously, this past weekend. Had a bunch of buddies come. So we went to old Joe Dogs. Danny, you'll like this. I ran into a couple, like, old hockey buddies. So we're just, like, drinking, having a good time. And I'm like, I got my back to the bar, Danny, like, in those little booths. So we're, like, sitting there. And then all of a sudden, there's, like, this huge commotion. Look down. Some girl's got another girl. Hair, full triangle choke, just rumbling on the floor. Yeah, full on chick fight at the Joe Dogs. That was another incredible night. It was great. Yeah. So I mean, Joe Dogs is always kind of gritty, but yeah, it was heavens. I don't know the last time I seen even like a bar fight, but then two girls. Yeah, it was incredible. So I was just like, and then like I was right there. But I'm like, I'm not getting in the middle of this. So I was just kind of like sitting there, like just laughing. Like, it took me a while to process too. I was like, are those two girls? Is that a triangle choke? Like, that's kind of impressive. And then finally the bell, there was only like 15 seconds and bouncer jumped in. I was like, and then they get up, their hair is all disheveled. So it's just, anyways.
We'll get to you, Donnie, quick. I just wanted to tell this one that we were at the, went to bar after our game, and we're watching the UFC fights, and like the UFC fights picking up pretty good. Say it's the third round, like music's playing, that Drake song, like Money in the Grave comes on, like everyone's kind of pumped in there. All of a sudden, look over, some guy's just getting folded, like gets sucker punched, and then takes three more to the face. His nose is broken, he's bleeding all over the pool table. And then this blonde girl comes over the top and starts throwing punches at the guy while he's like unconscious on the pool table. Anyways, he gets booted. We send one of our guys over to like the guy that got in the mix to like ask what happened. And I guess like the guy that got the wheels beat off him was trying to hit on this guy's girlfriend. got suckered. But this chick was the worst. Like, good looking girl. After it's all done and this poor bastard's nose is shattered, there's blood everywhere, she's like taking peace signs and posing with all the blood that's on the pool table and like getting people to take pictures of her there. And then just like grabbing her boyfriend. Like it was like fucking what's the Adrian and Rocky after Rocky wins the belt. Like that's what they're like acting like. And they're like cheering and like she's got his arm around. She's kissing him on the cheek. It was all just unbearable to watch. So shout out to the poor guy who got his beak shattered for just saying hi to a pretty girl. It's never, never a situation you want to be in. But Donnie, how are you doing, buddy?
I got nothing really? Like that. I've seen no fights recently. I got nothing to report, but no, I'm good. Big one for us yesterday, overtime. This is the craziest lacrosse season I've ever been a part of. We've been to overtime 4 times in 12 games. After 12 games, we're 6-6. Our goal differential is 0. Exactly 0. So this has just been the craziest season. We've had one win by a couple. We lost to you guys, Danny, by a couple. And none of our other games have been more than 2 goals, our other 10 games. So my mom texted me after the game. She's like, I can't handle all the OT. And I was like, yeah, you're fucking telling me. Like, I get it. So nice to be on the obviously on the positive side of that. And then flew out right after the game in Philly. So got home last night. Pretty quick trip. And then we seem to have a ton of Sundays this year, which is fine, except where we play Friday now in Halifax. Yeah, so it's a quick turnaround.
We did that earlier. It seems like it's like a 2-day week. It's crazy.
Yeah.
Getting home Sunday makes a big difference because you usually get home Monday, like late. So you're like Tuesday, Wednesday, and you're back out Thursday. But
yeah, huge. Like we did that a couple weeks ago in Texas where we played Sunday and then we were back there Friday. And we all said like we should have just stayed there for the week. Like we were 100%. At Pearson Airport on Monday getting home. And it's like, I'm going to be back here in like less than 72 hours. So anyways, it's part of it. We have a big stretch. I mean, we got 6 games left. The standings are insane. We're lucky Shem Lax is a contributor to Lacrosse Culture Daily, so he can explain the tiebreak scenarios because it could get a little wonky here depending what happens the rest of the way. But and tomorrow is the trade deadline. So by the time this comes out, maybe some movement, maybe not. Potentially a lot of teams still with playoff aspirations, obviously. So I don't think any of us are going to comment on anything, but could be some shit that comes out. I don't know.
Yeah, I got a ton of rumors built up, but I'm not going to tell them yet because I haven't established who they are. I'll start making stuff up in the next couple of hours here, and we can start tweeting it out or something.
Exactly.
But,
so,
an interesting time. One thing I wanted before I forget, I want to give a quick little shout out to a couple of listeners we've got out in California that my buddy sent me a message about. Jackson and Don. What is their last name? Simmons. Apparently Don's a big music guy, and there's rumors that he was the guy who discovered Creed. So kind of a cool little and then has some relation to discovering Eminem or something like that. So nice little resume on Don, but him and Jackson are big listeners and play lacrosse out there. So I always wanted to give a little shout out. Yeah, cool to know kind of where the fans are and who they are. It's interesting. But
So speaking of shoutouts, we've been talking about this for a while. Bad timing last week. We couldn't end up getting an episode done. But the February nominees are done. The voting is done and it's Braden Maye. I don't think it's a huge surprise. We'll see if he wins every month, but he's the first Back of the Bird player of the month. We'll work with the High Point NIL folks to make sure we're not putting him in a bad spot, but I think a hoodie, a little bit of cash, and
a giant box of shit. The hoodie's you're gonna get a hoodie, but it's gonna come in a box that's also got feces in it, so you can wear it if you want. But no, I mean, congrats to him. He's like top and like up there in the nation in goals or whatever. If he's not leading, like.
Yeah, we also had a lot of people vote in the poll, so just want to say thanks for everyone. I think this is kind of a fun segment for the whole Back the Bird community, so Thanks for everyone who voted, and we'll do it again, you know, fairly soon here at the end of March.
Yep. Yeah, congrats to him. I just, like, checked his score the other day. They lost 10-9, and he had 5 goals. So he's got to kind of quit that. So he's keeping it up, rolling into March, too. Outside of that, the one thing I texted you guys, I wanted to remember this, but, like, I was listening to Chicklets the other day, and they were talking about expanding the playoffs.
Yeah.
And having, like, a play-in game be a best-of-3 series. And if it's tied after 2 games, they do a fucking 10-minute mini game. And
he explained it like exactly how the mini game was in NHL. Like, it'd be interesting to like talk to him and be like, did you know this has already been a thing? Like, not that he's stealing it, but like if he got the idea from like, and it, I mean, dude, did you also hear his screen time?
17 hours.
Man, I was expecting, like, I don't know what I was expecting, like, but when it's a 17 hour, I was like, my jaw hit the floor. I couldn't believe that.
Well, I mean, like, so he's legitimately on his phone.
Like, unless he's sleeping. Like,
yeah, unless he's sleeping, he's like, that's the only time he's on his phone, and he's not sleeping enough. We'll tell him that much.
Yeah.
Like, I'm sure he's eating. Like, there's no way
his whoop score must suck.
Yeah, he's got to figure out that whoop score.
That's wild.
But yeah, that is – it's
– But like, again, they'll never do that, I don't think. And if they do, like, again, players will hate it. Again, you hear like from – I've been the beneficiary of them on the good side. But again, like, talk to all the guys from Calgary, like, it's so stupid. Right? It's just – it's crazy – and maybe if it's a play-in, it's a little bit different, but it's like, it's just crazy to think that, yeah, you're going to decide your season on a 10-minute overtime.
But speaking of interesting rules, so that the PWHL, the new Women's Hockey League, has adopted some like pretty fun rules, I would say. So one of them is if you score shorthanded, the penalty's over. It's like a jailbreak. And another one that I read on Twitter that they adopted is playoff teams will pick their opponents. So if you're the first seed, you pick who you want to play. It's not by standings, which if you're like in like on the media side, that's like awesome because there's so many storylines.
Yeah.
But like, what do you do? Like, imagine if we had that in the NLL. Like, just the disrespect, and if the one seed were to ever lose, like, I honestly, man, I think the one seed would choose the 8 seed every time, just to like avoid
and just cop out and be like, well, they're the 8 seed, so that's what we're gonna do.
Yeah, but exactly. Like, you do have to pick somebody, but like,
yeah, it's
teams would again, hate that.
Like,
I think
from a fan standpoint, from a media standpoint, like, it's great because it just automatically draws up drama and storylines, but like. Again, you got to think from like a team standpoint. Like, you would just hate that.
What do you think? Imagine, like, I don't know. If you're going full strategy mode here, do you just pick what you think is the next best team? Because you're like, we want to play them when we know we're healthy.
Well, yeah. I mean, that's definitely be one point. Be like, but again, what if like the best team in the league is 3-0 against like the next best team, so it's like, okay, well, we're better, like, you're essentially better than your matchup, and there's teams you match up better, right? Because even like, you know, 1-8, you might be 0-3 against the 8 team. It's just like a team you don't match up good against. But yeah, with that being said, like, you know how hard the first round is in the NHL, like, you're like, yes, maybe get the best team out of the way and then you can kind of cruise a night. And to be honest, like, the way the playoffs kind of are, that sometimes happens. Like, if you look the last couple of years, because it's not 1-8 anymore, it's all whatever weird with the divisions and stuff. But kind of your first round matchup kind of becomes your hardest one. Then you cruise, like, I should say cruise, but sometimes they cruise the rest of the way because it's like you already had the hard one. I don't know. It'd be interesting, but I just think from like a team standpoint, like, you would hate that. But
yeah, it would suck, I think.
Scoring and get the guys out of there. I like that.
The jailbreak rule.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of fun. I don't know. It's
especially like in our league, like I guess in hockey, like you get to ice it with no like repercussion. So that's like your somewhat advantage, but like shorthanded goals are so hard to come by, and power plays are so like not easy to score on, but like they're such a big part of the game now that it would make sense. Like the offensive team scores, the guy gets out. So why isn't it like any team scores, the guy gets out? Like why not punish a team for not playing good defense or whatever, or like screwing up? And it might incentivize like even more offense, like penalty killers trying to take more chances, which would like cause more goals from the power. I don't know, who knows?
Yeah, and the other thing, just to tie a bow on this, is I don't know if you guys saw, Friedman did a good bit, like a good job on this on Twitter, but Minnesota the other day in the NHL, they pulled their goalie in overtime. And if you pull your goalie in OT in the NHL and you get scored on, you lose the point. Like you lose the 1 point that you get. So if you pull your goalie and they score, you get 0 points, even though it's in overtime.
Really? Are you sure?
Yeah. That's what Elliot Friedman said on Twitter. Yeah.
That feels like he made that up. Like that can't be a rule. Is that a rule?
He doesn't make it up. No, he's Elliot Friedman. That's how.
No, it's true, because then they're asking the guys after, and like no one knew that part of it. I didn't really know that part either, but then
I've never heard
it. Makes sense, because everyone's like, why? Like they needed all the points they could get, but then it's like you also were sacrificing a point if you got scored on there.
That's ballsy then. That's way more ballsy than I thought it was.
Well, unless the coaches also didn't know.
Yeah, I would imagine that.
Hey, I mean, dude, did you read all those stories about the Super Bowl about Kyle Shanahan apparently not knowing what the overtime rule was?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Those rules make me like sick to my stomach. I was like, man, if that's true, like that guy's going to have like the worst embarrassment like that. Because it is true. If you knew what the rule was, you would have never taken the ball first, like in a million years.
Yeah.
So. Anyways, interesting. Got into rules chat there, which I've learned on the website is very contentious part of the internet. So
I love that, though. Get the people fired up.
Yeah.
Okay. So this we got Jack Hanna this week. We haven't said that yet. Should we toss it over to him?
Yeah.
Yeah. Super fun interview.
Yeah. Yeah. A lot of non-lacrosse talk, which was fun. We got into some lacrosse talk too, but there's a lot of non-lacrosse talk, which again, is really cool to do. So
some topics that you could guess what we're going to talk about 20 times. And
I guarantee you it will not be about someone named Leakey. But let's throw it over. Brought to you by Lucky Penny Media. At Lucky Penny Media, we're a full service marketing company without hefty agency pricing. We understand your brand is everything to you. And when working together, it means everything to us. You're more than just a client. You're a partner and a teammate. Our philosophy is simple. You grow, I grow, we grow. So here he is, Jack Hanna.
This Milford, Ohio native currently plays for the Vegas Desert Dogs and the Philadelphia Water Dogs. He played his college ball for the Denver Pioneers, where he was a multiple-time All-American, All-Big East selection, and the 2021 Big East Midfielder of the Year. He's also a 2022 PLL champion with the Water Dogs and just signed a new deal with the Water Dogs last week. Welcome back to the Bird, Jack Hanna.
Thanks for having me.
So we wrote these. I wrote the notes last week. So just imagine it's last week. The Denver Pioneers are number one team in the country. That's pretty sick. How does that
Let's
feel?
Go. Come on. Boys are still on top.
That's got to be pretty exciting. They lost on the weekend, for anyone who doesn't know. So now they're like, I don't know, top five?
I think they dropped to seven, man.
They plummeted.
No respect. The Blue Bloods all stayed between two and six. They lost to Yale. I think Yale's a pretty good team, too. Like, they played good ball. I was at the game.
And they dropped that many spots. That's madness.
Yeah.
I saw someone today on the rankings. I try not to get upset about rankings, but someone had Notre Dame over Army, and Army's 6-0 with like a top five win over Cuse. And I was like, and Notre Dame lost already and hasn't played any, like, I don't know, it just didn't make any sense. But
because it kills them not to rank Notre Dame, Duke, Virginia as high as they physically can. Like they could start out the season 0-3 and they'd be like, they got potential. We'll put them up there.
Who's in charge of that stuff? Coming from a non D1 lacrosse guy. Stupid question alert, but like, who's in charge of that? Like a committee?
There's a coaches poll and a media poll. So the coaches poll, I don't know how it's collected, but the coaches vote on that, I guess. And then the media poll, I think, is like Inside Lacrosse that compiles it all, but I actually don't know.
I think we should try to get our media vote. We should try to get a media vote as a credentialed podcast, I think.
I like it. I'll text somebody right now and see how they're
putting High Point at number one. They haven't won in 5 weeks.
Who are the Windsor Lancers? Why are we voting for them?
Gotta give them a vote.
Donnie mentioned it in the intro there talking about it, but you're just the man of any team named after a dog, right?
Yeah, I know. It makes it hard to explain professional lacrosse to people that don't know anything about professional lacrosse. Because once I get into my team names, they're just like, this is a joke, right? it kind of puts me in an awkward situation. I'm like, yeah, like it's just kind of a coincidence, man. Like it's, I don't know. It makes it odd.
What do you think is harder to explain, the desert dog or the water dog?
I think the water dogs.
Yeah.
Like at least the desert dogs, we have like a mascot. That they make them run around in the desert and they take pictures of them. So at least we have something to lean on there. The water dogs, we have nothing. I think it's a bulldog that they carry around to the field every once in a while. And I think bulldogs got to be up there at top worst swimmers out of the dogs. So it makes no sense at all.
They probably just straight sink.
I've actually never even thought about that. Like, what the fuck even is a water dog?
It's, I mean, I don't know, maybe like a lab or something. That'd be my first guess. Like a duck dog.
Every dog is still a land dog.
Yeah.
Like, there's no such thing as like this thing. Oh, it's just in the water all the time. Like, I don't know how that works, but
you could get, you could do the duck trolling retriever. That's a water dog.
Is it? Okay.
Yeah, all right. Actually has. Fun fact, they got, you know, like alligators have like those second eyelids?
Yeah.
That they can close and it like protects their eyes. So do duck trolling retrievers.
They have that. Like, this is absolutely nowhere near where I thought having Jack Hanna on, where this
was yeah.
Podcast.
That's an incredible fact.
Yeah, yeah, like that is, Paulie, I'm putting that in my back pocket for any time like conversation runs dry at work or if you're at the bar or something. It's like, funny you mention that. Yeah, these dogs do have a retractable eyelid so they can swim.
And they hunt ducks. So there's your water dog. So you have to get one of those now. Get rid of the bulldog and get a duck throwing retriever.
Yeah, budget cuts. I don't know if they're going to get a new dog anytime soon. You never know.
Message Big Cat PMT and tell them to get you a duck throwing retriever, and I'm sure it'll work out fine. Run it through Barstool.
We'll let them out.
Yeah.
You think in the branding of the water dogs, they would have accounted for the swimming ability, but
yeah, or at least an athletic dog. Like,
yeah.
Bulldogs have like a stopwatch on how long they're allowed to go run around in the yard. They like they all have asthma. Like they all can't breathe.
Sounds like the team that I should play for. That kind of sounds like my lacrosse game.
The Philadelphia asthmatics.
Yeah. Philadelphia diabetics.
Donnie's got this in the notes. I feel like there's a fun story here. It's a decent little segue. We're talking pets. What's the story behind how you got a cat?
So it starts with my buddy that was living on my couch this fall. And pretty much, you know, pretty self-explanatory. We were hanging out on a Sunday, and then we decided that we're going to go to the rescue facility. Again, he'd been on my couch for a while, so we were running out of things to do. So like we were like, whatever, let's go to the cat rescue facility. And we ended up petting cats for about an hour, and he talked me into bringing it home. I mean, it was $50, so I was like, you know, like I'm kind of anti putting a dog in an apartment. I'm a big dog guy, so I like dogs. I'm still not a cat guy. I only own a cat, but I'm not a cat guy. I'm a dog guy. But at the same time, the only thing I had to have an animal was probably a cat. You can leave the cat behind when I'm traveling and stuff. So made that decision again with my buddy on a Sunday afternoon. We spent a long period of time there. Yeah, you just take that however you'd like.
So he woke up that morning with no intentions of having a cat by the end of the even left for the pet facility. They just went to pet cats and like to hang out with the animals a little bit, and then they just brought one of them home.
I mean, on the way there, I was like, man, I'm not bringing a cat back to my house. And he was like, we'll see about that. And I was like, all right, man, like, sure, here we go. Spent a while. The first cat that we actually ran into, this thing was a fucking lynx. It was like 3.5 feet long, and it was just jogging on a 4-foot treadmill, like just a circle, like a big hamster wheel. But it was massive, and it was just jogging sprints. It was sprinting. And the thing jumped straight directly onto my shoulders, but I was like, this is like buying a small tiger. Like, I don't think I can do this, you know? But then we ended up going with the small little cat. I was trying to pump up my girlfriend a little bit with it too, but she didn't actually end up liking it that much. So now I just have a cat.
Did this place just have bobcats there? Like, I've never heard of a cat that big.
Oh, yeah. They had two of these things that were like, it had lynx in its name. I don't know the official term, but huge cat. It would have tore a hole directly in my couch, but I kind of wanted it because I was like, if I want an animal, I kind of want it to be badass. But, you know, next thing I know, I'm just have a common house cat. So I guess that plan kind of backfired.
And your buddy no longer lives on your couch. So the guy who talked you into this, he's gone.
Yeah, he talked me into it. He spent 3 weeks with the cat. And then now the cat gets all pissed off when you leave because it doesn't have my buddy on the couch anymore hanging out with it. But he had a good 2 months. I was thinking about giving it to him, but then I was like, the story of that is he was in a van and he had just quit his job in Ohio. And he had been driving his van across the top of the country, kind of visiting all sorts of places. And then I called him like 3 weeks before the PLL weekend in Denver. And I was like, start making your way this way. And he was like, all right, I can be there in a couple of days. And then he showed up, whatever, a week later, was on my couch for the PLL weekend. And then like 3 weeks later, I mean, this is a really shitty van too. We're talking $6,000. That's what he paid for it. Started driving it. His backup plan was a like $2,000 Chinese dirt bike that he had strapped in the back. So he's pretty much like, I got 200 miles wherever I'm at that I know this thing will run. So he had that on the back the whole time. He's kept going up in the mountains and going mountain biking and then coming back and hanging with me for a couple of days. The van breaks down in the Walmart parking lot. He rides the dirt bike over to my house. That night, the dirt bike gets stolen. So like the whole plan went out the window. 2 months later, we have a cat together and he's just hanging out on my couch for a couple months. But yeah, there's a whole situation. There was substance involved in going to get this cat, but yes, you know, the type of, yeah, you know, make you want to go pet cats for a while, but yeah. So we got it now. Again, I'm pretty stumped by this thing. I don't know really what to do with it. I don't know how to handle a cat. Never had a cat. My mom hates cats. I'm here with a cat. I can't wait to get a dog. I can't wait because hopefully the dog just shoos the cat away and keeps it somewhere else. I don't know.
If you're in the Denver area and you're a fan of Back of the Bird, just we got a free cat if you want it.
Yeah.
Well, actually, $50. Can't take a loss.
Yeah. No, dude. We're gonna need like $150 now after the food and shit. Like, they got an automatic feeder for the thing. Like, you know.
Did you get one of those the cat castle things, like a big structure for it? Or what do you got? Like, did you go all in on toys for this thing?
So what I do is I had one of those little cat trees. Like, I had one, but I just moved apartments. I couldn't fit it in my car. So I was like, whatever, chucked it. So all I do, the only toys that I buy this thing is a bunch of little mini birds that squeak. And then to keep it from tearing up my couch and stuff when I leave, I just hide the birds around my apartment. And then by the time I get back, all the birds are underneath the couch. So she has caught, killed, and put the birds underneath the couch.
So, yeah. So you're training a hitman cat.
Like, I want this thing to be a killer. I don't want a little soy boy cat running around. Like, it needs to be able to do something. So I like to train it when I'm gone.
Always get better.
I don't know. I don't fucking know.
Maybe we should talk a little bit of lacrosse here.
Dude, I loved the 15-minute cat segment. That was fun.
Yeah, that was good.
Yeah, a lot of game time decisions.
Yeah. So how, you know, we usually just go chronologically here. How did you kind of get into the sport? How did you pick up the stick? And what was kind of your early days in lacrosse like?
So the first introduction to lacrosse was just my cousin played at the University of Denver. So he kind of introduced me to it, but lacrosse was certainly not a hotbed in where I, like in Cincinnati, Ohio at the time. It's grown quite a bit, but didn't have too much exposure with it. I played a bunch of different sports growing up. Like it wasn't like I was playing lacrosse the whole time. So then my high school team, like we just had a lot of athletes. Like we put basketball players, football players, have them play defense. So pretty non-hotbed area. Didn't really get recruited. Got recruited late to Denver, but things ended up working out from there. But typical, pretty typical non-hotbed area situation. I had some good coaches that were pretty helpful over the years. I was pretty lucky to run in at least two guys that were pretty high knowledgeable lacrosse players that were able to at least point me in the right direction so I could continue to get better, even though I wasn't always around them, you know. But that's kind of how it got going.
Hey, were those guys Anthony Kelly and Greg Bice?
So actually, partially yes, but also okay. Those guys cut me. So
no way, because they run a big
good, thing. So I'm good friends with them. So I'm not super good friends with them. Like I know them personally and well. Like if I saw Greg, I 100% I'm saying what's up no matter what. But I don't talk to him all the time, you know. But essentially that Resolute Club that they run. So essentially, like Resolute, the program that they run started becoming a thing in Columbus, Ohio. So that's where all the really really good kids were playing in the state, which was a lower number at the time. So like it was pretty important to go play on that team if you're going to play in college. My freshman and sophomore year, I got cut. And then my dad was pretty much like, well, they're probably going to cut you again. So he was just like, we're going to stay in Cincinnati. We're not going to put all our time and effort into being able to get on a team that you have to drive an hour and a half to practice. So he was just like, if you're, you know, kind of ran on the, if you're good enough, they're going to find you type of thing.
Yeah.
And luckily it panned out. But yeah, like Bice and them are great guys though. They were definitely helpful over the years. Bice is actually the one that really got me into box lacrosse.
Nice. Okay. Yeah. Who were the guys that were helping you then?
So like Mark Lynch, he didn't play any big time lacrosse, hasn't coached very big time, but he's a really good high school coach and he's really well connected. So like, you know, over the years, like he brought in like Randy Stotts one time when I was, I was a senior in high school and he had Randy run us, a box clinic and like just called him out of the blue, but was really well connected and to the box side of things, the field side of things, had a good head on like who I should kind of be watching and paying attention to, pointed me toward the Thompsons, native guys, learning how they play the game, pointed me in the direction of a lot of the Canadian guys to watch them and learn how they do things. And, you know, that was kind of how it worked out with him. And then one of my other coaches, he was an old timer guy, but he played at UMBC back in the day. And he played a little like early MLL days. He was like my youth coach. So he was just the guy that he just knew how to handle the lacrosse stick. So like he was able to teach me how to pass and catch when a lot of kids, that was honestly like the first step. That was huge.
Can you explain, like, you know, one of the things that's unique about you is a lot of the Americans in the league either play NLL and that's their first box lacrosse, or some guys like Joe Resiteritz, like live close to the border and Fieldsy that came up when they were kids. You pretty much came up through the American box system. Can you explain kind of how that worked from like, when did you first start playing box? And then even maybe through college, like what was kind of the career path just from a box perspective?
Yeah, so again, same guy, Mark Lynch, he was the first one to introduce box to us. But the first box I played was like maybe junior, sophomore year high school. But that, like, it's tough to call it box. It was like more like he was teaching us picks and rolls, but no one had all the same equipment on. Like we were playing in field pads. It was, you know, more or less turns into a little bit of a track meet, but you still get a little bit better of it because you're playing in a smaller space still, so it helps you a little bit in the skill side of things. That he never really took it too far. He wasn't like interested in running a big time league and really growing it a bunch, but he was like interested in showing us how to do it. So like that was kind of my first introduction. And then it was the BC tour stuff with the US box list. So we went up to BC and we played, I mean, well, we played Langley, we played some of that, we played Coquitlam, played a couple different games, got to see kind of some of the historic rinks and things like that. And that was like my first like true introduction to box lacrosse, where I had to be wearing rib pads, we were wearing bicep pads. You know, I'm not gonna lie, the Canadian guys were beating the shit out of us during that. They were definitely making us like, because we were all, it was very obvious, we were all high schoolers that were brand new to box lacrosse. So they were a little bit incentivized to make sure that we really felt what it was like, you know? So that was fun. But like, that was, I fell in love with it then, because I was like, this is awesome. You know, it kind of reminded me of football a little bit. You know, it's like, you know, there's more room for error when you're throwing different types of passes and stuff because the ball stays in bounds. Like, I just thought there was a lot of room for possibilities. Reminded me of basketball. I loved it. And then the only other experience I had before the NLL was playing in the U.S. Box Collegiate League. So that stuff was good. It started off slower. Like, there wasn't super good box lacrosse. By my third or fourth year that we were doing it, it had developed into looking a little bit better. And now they're playing a lot better lacrosse. So that was all really the experience that I had, though, going into the NLL.
That's unreal. But you're kind of like, again, like Donnie said, you're kind of like the first guy in this league that's come up through that, like kind of from start to finish, which is pretty cool. And then, like, again, for American kids, like the success you're having too, it's like, it shows that it's worth doing, right? So it's pretty cool that, you know, you go from kind of not even playing lacrosse, not playing box, going through this, and now kind of reaping the rewards of doing all that stuff, which is super cool.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it kind of, it really opens up like the other side of lacrosse to you, especially when you're only exposed to field lacrosse. Like, there's just so many things you miss out on. And I think it's partially why I like it so much now too, is because I'm still learning so much, you know, so it's never kind of ending. It's, I still have plenty to learn. It's not going to stop for years to come. So it's, yeah, I think a lot of kids will, I think we're going to keep seeing it. I also think a lot of the American D mids that are coming out of college and stuff, like Danny Logan and these guys, they're going to be able to become, they'll be able to transfer in the game a little bit better. I think once more guys do it and more guys kind of take the chance.
100%.
Well, it's interesting too, because obviously it's been well documented that the box influence on field has grown. So guys who just play field, they get exposed to box concepts too. Like, you know, every American defender now knows at least how to get through a pick or open up on a pick. Like, it's not foreign to them. So I think it's interesting how it kind of comes both ways. I also never knew the story about you guys actually going up to Vancouver. That's pretty cool. And I always think, like, there's always tons of guys like, I want to play box. And my response is always like, all right, we'll go up to Canada. Like, it's there, you can do it. So I think that's cool. You guys went up there. Before we kind of move on to the next stage, while we're just talking about your childhood, can you explain the wiffle ball tournament that your family puts on?
Yeah. So, okay. So my family doesn't exactly put it on. It's kind of like a group. So Essentially it was one big class of guys that was all my dad's age-ish. My dad wasn't friends with them all growing up. So it was like all these guys that went to Milford High School together. And then every year of college, when they all came back, they would play right before Labor Day, before they went back to school, they would play a big old wiffle ball tournament. And it grew quite a bit. So it started in this guy Leakey's backyard. You got the name from pissing himself when he's drinking. It was at Leakey's mom's house originally. So it's bounced around, and I'm not well versed in every house it's been in. You got to kind of talk to one of the old head guys about it. But there's a very tight knit like 20 group guys. There's like 20 or 25 of them probably that are like the main core group of guys that have been doing it for all the years. And they're all kind of stopping playing now. Now their kids are playing. But they played for years after college. They kept it going when they all got jobs. And then now, like, I remember, so my older brother was the first, like, kids team to be good. So when they were in eighth grade, my older brother got the Cy Young Award. He played. He was really good. My older brother was practicing wiffle ball as much as he was practicing basketball. And he ended up being a college basketball player. And he would practice throwing wiffle balls in the backyard all year round before this thing. Essentially how it's set up. From when I was a kid, like, it was more exciting to me than Christmas morning was the Leakey Classic. That's great. At 8 a.m. It's $40 all you can drink, obviously, for adults. And then it finishes when I was younger, it would finish at like 3 a.m. And they would have a beer truck with about 30 kegs. You get a T-shirt for your buy-in, and you can drink all day for your buy-in. And then there's always a guy with a, there's like, we just hire a couple guys with big old grills, and then they come and just cook burgers all day, and people eat just burgers and hot dogs all day. The tournament went from like 12 to 13 teams, and it grew into the biggest tournament in the United States. So it had, we had 52 teams in the biggest year. And then we build out one wooden fence that is, you can tear it down and put it back together, but it's a, so it's about 100 feet for the home run wall. And then we've had to move it back as kids have gotten better. But essentially we have one that you take down and put back up a couple, what was it? Probably 6 or 7 years ago. So my dad was a structural engineer. So essentially this guy, Chris Will, who was putting the tournament on for my whole childhood, and he ran this place called the Boat Club, which is literally just a like a place that people go and play in a field, but it's like kind of tucked away next to this river. And it's kind of like all secluded in woods, and there's this big, huge open field. They all, apparently, essentially all our parents did was have birthday parties there and party. So they would go there, enough space to run the wiffle ball tournament. Chris Will was in charge. Chris Will's father passed away. He left $60,000 or so, I think, to build a new wiffle ball stadium. So we have another wooden field, because the other ones we would use, we'd normally have 3 or 4 fields, and the other ones would just be metal posts with like chicken wire and stuff on them, that, or like the, you know, like the orange construction chicken plastic. And then it would, we would have those up to be about 4 feet high. And then the main fence was full size, 6 foot piece of plywood tall. So it's like, you know, if you jump and try to save a homer, you're getting your armpit in there. Like, it's a whole thing. We ended up building a, I mean, it ended up being like $110,000, but it was essentially like, there's a full fence, looks like any high school, like baseball field you see, you know, yellow collar on top, but wooden fence, painted out green. And then we had a huge score table that was 60 feet high. Straight, not 60 feet, it was probably like 40 feet from the base of the wall, is like 40 feet. It went straight up, and then we had a full clock tower, full size high school scoreboard. And then from the top of the home run wall, they built out a deck, and then underneath the clock tower was a full like booth for a guy to be on a mic late night, because essentially once it gets down to it, everyone only plays games on the main field. And then essentially whoever's the most banged up from the day ends up kind of being the ref. So there's always this one guy called Squirt, and I don't even actually know his real name. I see him to this day when I go home. I know him by Squirt. He's like a 5 foot bald guy, and he'd be like, pretty much just his whole day was a bottle of Jack Daniels, and his team would always just be 2 and out, immediately eliminated. They never won. He was a terrible player, but he always put on to be the ref in the championship games. And he just puts on a ruckus, like just at any call he wants to make, he makes. But the other thing is, people take this shit super seriously. Like, I would say in the last 5 years, there's been 4 fights, like bench clearing brawls, like to the point to where like the police are getting called. Like, I'm not going to lie. I haven't been in a while because of college. I'd always be gone, but my brothers and everybody still play, so I always get the report back. But, yeah, I mean, dude, I know guys from my childhood that I still hate. This guy named Panko, I hope he doesn't hear this. He probably wouldn't, but he's a little bit of a psycho. Him and
his
son.
I think we're safe.
Dude, him and his son.
I'll check our analytics, see what our viewership's like in Ohio, but if Panko's listening
to this. No way this Panko guy's, he's locking it in. But Panko, I mean, he wears a Miami U cutoff, and he's been wearing the same thing for like 15 years. It's like the dirtiest Miami University, and he represents like 90s football Miami University. Like, he is a psycho. He's screaming at moms. He's screaming at parents. My older brother's team beat him in 8th grade, and he literally like chewed out my brother in 8th grade. And he was like, I fucking hate the Hannahs. I hate your family. Like, you guys are the fucking worst. Like, lost his mind. And it's because in, what year was it? I think it was 2012, my dad won. And that was the last time he had a good team, and probably the last time he was athletic. But they won, and Panko was at bat in the championship game. He was 3rd out, and he had a line drive off my dad's chest. My dad's falling backwards. The shortstop caught the ball, so full ricochet off him. It was a line drive. Panko snaps the bat over his knee and chucks it in the woods. It's like 2 a.m. at this point, too. Me and my brothers are like 6th, 7th grade. We run back in the woods. That bat that's cracked in half is still hanging in our garage.
That's amazing.
It is a memorial of the Leaky Classic in our garage. My dad,
that is all time.
I like how no one in Milford has a real name, by the way. It's Leaky, Squirt,
Pankos. Those guys from the Leaky Classic that I know. Like, I wouldn't always see them around town, but, like, I know them from the Leaky Classic, so they kind of go by their nicknames for me. But, yeah, that's awesome. my brother's now, like, the greatest player of all time.
He's nice. Going to retire his jersey.
He's in the Leaky Hall of Fame. Right?
He actually is. He's got 6 Cy Young Awards, and he's got, I think they won 5 in a row. That's and then amazing. Some job issues. Yeah, I mean, our basement has all my awards, my little brother awards, my dad's awards, my brother's awards. They're hung before any award we've ever won in real sports. Like, yeah, it's awesome. It's the greatest thing ever. But, yeah, that's the Leaky Classic.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Well, do you think we should get into a little bit of lacrosse talk?
We talked a little bit. We've been bobbing and weaving.
Bouncing back and forth. Maybe we'll dive into a little bit of your time at Denver. First of all, do you remember like your recruiting trip there? Like the first time you went?
So I didn't really have like a normal, so I was a preferred walk-on. So like I didn't really have a big recruiting trip. Essentially, I was going into my senior year of high school, played a fall tournament or like late summer tournament with a team from Texas that my coach got me onto. But it was the first team I ever played on that had like kids committed to college. And so I was able to go play a tournament with them, and I ended up getting like a call from Coach Tierney, like, and when I was in the airport, to the point where I like barely even believed it. I was like, I don't really think so, dude. Like, there's no way. But my mom's like, it's Bill Tierney. So he gave me a walk-on spot. And then the first time I ever went to campus was a quick day tour. And then I was on the official visit. So I was like, I don't even think Coach Brown saw me play lacrosse until I was on campus.
Yeah, just so people know too, just to clarify here. So a walk-on is when you have to get into the school on your own and then you have to try out for the team. A preferred walk-on means you don't get help in the admissions process, but you're on the team. Once you get in, you're on the team. That's basically the difference.
Yeah, like I had a spot. It was just I didn't have any athletic scholarship or anything like that. It was like over the year, like, so my freshman year I was terrible, didn't play at all. Ended up working hard, playing a lot of box lacrosse during the summers, because most of the pickup lacrosse I could go play was box, like men's leagues and whatever. Some of it was really bad lacrosse, but I would just go play, have my stick in my hand. So I played like as much lacrosse as I could that summer. Ended up coming back and I, you know, gained some weight, grew a little bit, and I was starting from there. But yeah, I mean, like in general, my whole time at University of Denver was unreal. Like I loved it. Like all the guys are great guys. We got beauties all over the place. Bunch of good players is around over the years. You know, obviously it's just full of good stories from all the old time guys that, you know, made Denver what it is. So yeah, I mean, it was a great time. Playing for Coach T was awesome. I don't think I'd be playing in the NLL if it wasn't for Matt Brown either. Like he really pushed me in that direction. Gave me a lot of advice. I mean, like, he gave me the freaking rib pads that I'm wearing. Like, you know, they're old De Beer ones. I don't know how old they are that he gave me, but they're awesome. It's like having a barrel around your chest. But, yeah, so, like, I owe those guys everything, man. Like, they've done everything for me. So, absolutely. It was I love Denver.
That's all time. Okay, well, let's move into kind of once you wrap up at school. Do you go, I guess you're like right into the PLL? Is that how that kind of happened? Going into your senior year, or how did that work?
So I got drafted. So I did my 5th year. So then I think I got drafted, but it was like the COVID situation. I kind of forget how it worked out. I think I got drafted in my 5th year because they doubled up those draft classes.
Like it was late in the spring. It was like the week before playoffs.
Yeah. Yeah. So I had no idea if I was even going to be able, like what was going on with that. And until real late in the 5th year season. But then, you just go right into it. I mean, I think I went to the first training camp with like $350 in my name. I was pretty, and then I figured out we got paid bi-weekly, and I was like, damn, this is not good. So I was just taking IOUs left and right.
Yeah. The problem with PLL too is it's right after like the worst bender, like the biggest bender of your life is when you're done college. You're just like, fuck it. Like let a rip.
She can email or text. I'll reach out to
Alex. Okay. We're
all in good. All right. Appreciate it. No problem. All right. Sounds good.
Thanks,
see ya. My bad.
So you finish your season. You got all the emotions of that. You're fucking banged up from like 4 or 5 years of college. Then you go on a bender. Then you're going to PLL camp, and you're like, what the hell is going on here?
Yeah. Yeah. 100%.
And those training camps are like a heater of a thing, isn't it? Like a long time too.
It's actually like, it's just long. It's not that hard. I don't know about you, Jack, okay. But
I think it depends on what team you're on for how hard it is. True. I know we have like we do like 2 days that are like relatively hard. But I mean, you play a game right afterwards, so it's not like you can go too hard the whole time. What do we get there on like a Friday, and then you're there until that next Friday, and then you normally play that weekend, so it's like 11 days or something like that. It's more of like it feels longer than it is because you're kind of stuck in these Albany dorm rooms, and then like there's not really much to do besides everyone just goes and buys a 20-inch TV and you return it at the end of the week, and then like you just kind of sit there and play cards the whole time, and then you just constantly are like going to like league meetings, and then you just go to practice in the morning. Kind of, it feels like a camp. It's weird. I don't know.
Interesting. How's your card game?
It depends where we're playing. So like, I'm pretty good in euchre because I mean, not as many guys play euchre. So I grew up playing euchre, and I know you guys probably all know euchre as well. You kind of always have the upper hand in euchre if you've played it long enough. I'm a decent poker player. I wouldn't say I'm good, but like. We used to play a decent amount in college. I don't know. It kind of depends, though. We bounce the games around a lot. Sometimes I'm fresh to games. I'm not a bad player, though. Like, most games I can figure out.
Any game you can stick into. I guess when you play cards, you can pick. If you're a good card player, you can kind of play any card game eventually.
Yeah, yeah. I played a bunch of cards growing up. Like, my parents, that was always what we did when we were doing family time and stuff. Like, we're playing cards, yeah. Playing a board game or something like that. So, you know, it's not a hard adjustment.
Any big money being thrown around in these card games or just passing the time?
Yeah, we don't normally go too big on it. I think
when you're there for 11 days, it could get pricey.
Yeah, like, well, once I won one game, I then was voting for it to be pricier. Because then I was like, everybody's like $20 in per game. And then it was like last man standing for whatever game we were playing. And it was like, once I won one, I had 200 to work with. So then I was like, fantastic. Let's go $40, guys. Everybody in? Like, yeah. You know, like, but I normally stay out of like the Bure games that they run up pretty high. Yeah. I don't have the finances to like accidentally burn like a $600 bid on those. So,
well, yeah. Especially after your rookie year and you got 350, you're like, I really need this fucking game of euchre here.
Year two, I was much more financially sound going into it, but I still was hesitant to get into the big games.
What was that like? You know, again, it's first year PLL is kind of a weird transition where you're from college right into it. But then obviously you guys have a good year and end up winning the whole thing. What was that kind of that whole summer like? And then what do you remember? You know, from actually winning the title?
I mean, it was awesome, obviously. Like, stepping into it, obviously, I was pretty nervous at first. You have no idea where you're going to really stand or, you know, it's like, you know, you watch everybody on TV, you don't really know how good everybody is when you're watching film. You kind of got to be there to really figure it out. So I was a little nervous at first. But once I had played enough and got that first game under my belt, I felt pretty comfortable. And then, you know, obviously the season went really well, too, for us. Like, struggled a little bit at first. Won a lot of games, dropped one, or I think we dropped just like one going towards the playoffs, and we kind of kept rolling from there. So it kind of honestly felt like one of those like picture perfect seasons where it was like nothing really went too wrong. But obviously it's like your first go at it and everything goes perfectly. It kind of puts you in a make it feel a little bit easier than it actually is kind of thing. But you know, I think I got lucky with a really good locker room of guys too. Like we just got between like, you know, Goldbreck, Zach Currier, Burns, like every single guy in the team is kind of on the same page and gets it. We got a lot of NLL guys too. So I think that kind of benefits your locker room, you know, just because you're used to holding a little bit stronger of a locker room than some of the PLL teams might from like the outside view, at least, you know, it kind of seems like a little bit more like everyone's showing up like a club team and not really hanging out together and then doing whatever. But I feel like having enough guys in the NLL that really spend a bunch of time with the team, it transfers into kind of how our PLL locker room works, that everything, it doesn't, like, once I got to the NLL, the locker room didn't feel any different. And it's like, we got a pretty good locker room in Vegas. Like, we got a good group of guys, everyone gets along well. So I think that really made the whole thing easy. Honestly, like every time I got nervous, I just had Mikey Slosser in my ear, you know, just him and his big, beautiful mullet, just telling me like, whatever could be coming out of his mouth, and it always kind of made me cool down and figure things out. He's a very good voice to have in the back of your head on the bench.
He's one of the all time best humans ever, man. That guy is just he's a different breed, but he is awesome, man. Just salt of the earth, but he's awesome.
Yeah, there's a small group of people that I would be willing to at any drop of the notice do something for, and it was like when Mikey had to come back to Colorado to get his knee scoped. He landed in Denver and he had to go to Vail, and I signed up immediately. I was like, yeah, I'm canceling whatever I got. I'll drive you to Vail, dude. Like, are you kidding me? And just hung out with him all day. He was going to get his knee scoped, and we went up early and we went fly fishing in the morning, and then went straight to the hospital, sweaty as hell. And he was like, I think it'll be fine. They can clean my leg off. And I'm like, I guess. Like, I'm just going to go fishing again. I'll pick you up in 2 hours. But he's like the best guy on earth to have a car ride with.
Oh, yeah, 100%, man. He's awesome.
I will say, to chime back in the cat situation, Mikey Slosser had a very big impact on that.
Big cat guy. Big cat guy. Yeah.
I was joking around with him for a while about it, and he just would never let it go. And then I was just like, I think part of the reason I bought that cat was to send a picture of it to Mikey. He loved it.
Just send snaps back and forth of your cats.
Yeah. Well, he'll just tweet it at you.
Yeah.
What do you remember from we had guys on right after the fact, but what do you remember from the actual game and the celly afterwards? And I think maybe you had to use the Cash App money to buy cigarettes or something.
I remember this. So it was, we got Wawa gift cards. Okay. So they gave us, everybody got a $25 Wawa gift card before everything. It was like a little gift package you got in your room when you got there for the championship. And we were all like, great. And all of our veterans immediately pile all the Wawa gift cards together. And they're like, congrats. You and Higgins are going to go get as many cigarettes and as much booze as you can at Wawa. And we were like, okay. We're also in like the middle of like, to be fair, like, I don't really know Philly that well, but based on what was going on, we were not in the best part of Philly. And this gas station was just like littered with homeless dudes that were, to be fair, like most of them were like either smoking crack outside, shooting something up, wandering around, just yelling at people that are walking outside of this gas station. And we all went to the gas station at one point together to like go get snacks or whatever we were doing. We were hanging in the hotel. And I was like, you guys want us to go to that place and buy as many cigarettes as we can and walk out the front door? I was like, if they look through the glass, like we're toast. They're gonna lose their mind. Like if I walk out with a couple cartons, like we're in trouble. And the worst part, like, we get there and Wawa doesn't sell booze. So I had $650, and I was told to come back with zero of it. So I was like, okay, I'm gonna get as much as I can. And I bought like two cartons of Marlboro Reds, a couple of the vape sticks, bunch of chew. I just ran them clean. And then
just the
we brought a backpack, stuffed it all in the backpack, and I kept one pack of cigarettes in my pocket. And when we were walking out of the hotel, like walking out, like I could see the homeless guy start getting pumped, and like they're like watching what we were doing. And I just kind of just tossed him a pack of cigarettes, and we kind of took off down the road, and we were good to go. But
just threw them on the ground.
The funny part was once we started smoking in the locker room afterwards, like. They were like, they were saying cigars were cool. Like they gave us cigars and stuff. And then like all of our vets are like, no, put the cigars away. And we got all the cigarettes out, and like Seth Tierney and like the execs walk in and they're like, what are you guys doing? Like, everybody has a Marlboro in their mouth. And like, they're just taking pictures of us. And like, they're looking around like no one had the responsibility to tell these guys that we can't take a bunch of pictures of them all smoking cigarettes. And yeah, I think Mikey Slosser handled the situation. He was like, you ever seen that cool picture of that guy in the Super Bowl smoking a cigarette at halftime? He's like, that's what we're going for. And they were just kind of like, what? So, yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
That's funny. You had the Mount Rushmore of nicotine from Wawa. whatever you can handle.
Yeah, I bought one of everything.
So switching back to box, basically a story of two drafts for you. You know, one, you get drafted by Panther City, and then get drafted again in the expansion draft. What was that like to kind of have a little bit of like a false start where you get drafted and before you've even done anything, you know, you're on a different team already?
It was kind of weird, to be honest. Like, I didn't really notice when I got picked up by Vegas. Like, Willie called me the next day. So, like, I saw it on Instagram. And, like, I think my dad texted me. He was like, you just got drafted by Vegas, because we were joking around about it the day before. Because I was like, I'm on Panther City. And, like, I had why can't I think of his name right now? Bob.
Hanley.
Yeah, so he's friends with Coach Brown. So I had met him at DU practice before. When Panther City was playing the Mammoth, like, he swung by. I was honestly all excited about it. I was like, great, this is cool. And again, like, I was joking around with my dad about it. My dad was like, how cool would it be if you got picked up in this expansion draft? And I was like, Dad, I'm like the American rookie out of this, like, U.S. box of the league. I don't think I'm a hot topic in the expansion draft. Like, I don't think anybody's going to pick me up. And then I wasn't even paying attention when it happened. And then, yeah, again, I saw on Instagram. And then I think I had a text message from Willie. It was like, hey, we picked you up. I'll give you a call tomorrow. So it was a very bang bang thing. Like, I, the whole time I was like kind of excited about playing for Panther City. So yeah, it was just a quick switch up, but it all panned out. Like, I enjoy it. I think I love playing for Coach Willie. Like, he's a heck of a guy to learn from. So I think it in the end panned out, but I also think, you know, if it didn't happen too, I think we could have a cool situation. You never know.
No doubt. What do you think, what's been the hardest thing to transition through in the NLL, and what would you say was like your like welcome to the league moment?
So I think it's feeding the ball is the biggest transition for me, and just like kind of throwing it before a guy's open and being able to, because, you know, it's like when you do something long enough, right, and field lacrosse, you just mentally picture where the defense is at, you know how they're moving, I understand all the defenses really well. So then, you know, those passes become a lot easier because you just see what the defense is doing and you know where the open guy is, versus when I switch to box and I realize how many different looks they can kind of give me, and like learning everything that they're trying to do, and then being able to like find gaps in the defense and feed the ball well when I was still learning how the defenses were shifting and moving together. Like, I caught myself like early on and like throwing feeds that were getting picked off really easily. And I was like, damn, like, I really thought that was there, you know? And it was like starting to learn just the flow of the defense. And that's helped me out a lot. The more I've learned about defense, the better off I've been offensively. So that was a big one. And then I would say my welcome to the league moment was, we were playing Sask, and Rubish, like, I'd heard all about Rubish on the scout, but I honestly didn't know what he looked like. So I was like, I have no idea what this guy looks like. I think I know what number he is. And we were like, okay, if you get the ball in open space, like, if we have Rubish, it's probably the worst guy we can work a two-man a game against, obviously, right? Like, he's really good. So I'm like, okay, again, don't really know his face or anything. The first chance I get against him, I don't know it's him, and he's making an approach. And in my head, I'm like, oh, my God, dude, like, let's go. Like, he looks kind of wonky the way he's approaching me. I ended up beating him pretty clean, going and taking a shot. And then I come off of the bench, and Willie's like, what are you doing? I'm like, what do you mean? He's like, why did you just dodge Rubish? Like, that was the one guy we talked about, like, trying to keep him moving off ball or doing whatever. And I'm like, oh, okay, like, my bad. Next time I caught a ball, he's approaching me again. And I was like, oh, I beat him last time. Like, I got this. And he stripped me up in this way that I don't know what he did with his stick, the way I was, like, trying to bring my stick underneath to where it just felt like I had a sandbag on my back and the ball was going up and out the other way so quickly. And he was like, and I came off the bench and Willie was like, that's what we were talking about. He's like, it takes one and he's going to figure out what you're doing with your hands. And it was true. Like, that was the one for me. Cause you know, it's not like he's the biggest like looker of an athlete. No, like, no disrespect. Like, you know, you look at the guy and he looks like any other person, but when he gets his hands on you, he's going to take the ball from you. So that was the one that definitely caught me off guard and was probably my welcome to the league.
We've had a lot of talk about that on this podcast, is everyone just being like, don't go underneath on him. The ball is, no matter how big of a lane you think you have, the ball is going to come out of your stick.
Yeah. And Lomi thinks it's holding.
Yeah. And I think it's a hold, but hey, that's neither here nor there. I think some things that a lot of people would disagree with. So that's completely different.
I think it's a hold in slow motion.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's a disguised hole. I think it's a pro way to disguise a hole. It's like the Callum Crawford award that's gone uncalled forever. That's disguised, and he can get away with it.
How about that? By the way, how about that? I'll probably cut this out, but how about that clip the NLL put out of Zed Williams? I think Gibson ended up scoring the goal. He like fully stiff armed the guy. Like watched it on Instagram. I was like, what the fuck?
Yeah,
that was the most egregious award.
He leaves Eddie out of this. He's just a
big that's Paulie's teammate.
I said I'll cut it out, Paul. Off the record.
It was a cool little angle of that shot, though.
Yeah, it was cool.
It was sick. Yeah. Actually, we got like we were on the bench for that shot too, and you could see it. It was actually like, you know, when you get that like view that, right that from nice the view. So, but yeah, putting it in slow mo, you see Eddie fucking just one arm shiver fucking the guy away.
I thought it was pretty funny how little effort it looked like he put into it too. Like
he's a massive human being, dude. He's fucking huge.
He keeps getting wider.
Yeah, he's just massive. Nicest guy in the world. He's massive.
We've had you for a while. Do we want to go on anything else, boys? Or
well, I think maybe just because obviously, like before, Paulie hopped on here and we're kind of like just chatting. You're obviously doing this from that new lacrosse den. Maybe just kind of like that's a pretty, you know, we described it as like the fantasy factory. Like, tell us a little bit about that place. Looks like a pretty sick spot.
Yeah, so we have like it's a 17,000 square foot warehouse that we've essentially turfed, put some nets in. It's like a big old batting cage. You know, you can shoot a million balls. And then we got a gym in the back, but pretty much all I do is, you know, we do pro clinics here and there when I can get guys in town and, you know, let these kids meet people that they're watching on TV. And then during the week, we're just training up these kids. And, you know, for me, it's taken a lot of the structure in club lacrosse out of what these kids are doing and kind of putting them in a lot of situations to where they can really like have fun and learn to play lacrosse. Like, we all know line drills aren't that fun. It's like, we've done it 1,000 times. Like, some of these passing drills that these kids just aimlessly go through isn't very fun. So I like to make sure that, you know, all these kids are experiencing lacrosse the right way. Like, I pretty much, my rule is I'll teach you anything. It's like, if they're getting bored with overhand shooting and they want to learn how to throw behind the back, it's like, great. Like, we're going to work on behind the backs. You know, it's just kind of, you know, it's a great spot. Everybody that comes in here starts ripping balls around. Like, Don knows, the guy that works out me and Don when he's in town occasionally, Patrick Nolan, he's the guy that subleases out the back for us. And he does like a big NFL combine group. So he's got, you know, training all sorts of guys, go do their combine, pro days, all this stuff. So we got these big, huge, like football guys, big athletes that they all come in here to run 40s. Every time these guys come in here, they're all picking up lacrosse sticks and whipping the ball around. It's hilarious, but like it kind of really puts a point to like what the building's like. It's a playground. You know, everybody that comes in here wants to pick up a ball and rip it around. I have like trouble keeping the parents off the floor because they all want to run around out there and shoot the ball. But yeah, like I'm doing 4 days a week of training classes, girls and boys, and then they do it on Sundays when I'm back in time and things like that. You know, I've been trying to staff up the whole place, the best coaches I can find around Denver. And it's going really well. Like, things are starting to buzz. People are starting to get the idea of things. I think some of my training techniques, whether it was playing 3-by for 15 minutes at the end of every session or, you know, however I'm working on passing and catching in the middle and stuff, some parents were definitely like, what is this? This isn't like club practice. But I finally kind of got over the hump to where now they believe me. And all their kids are getting better faster and having a lot of fun playing lacrosse. So everything's going to plan. I'm having a good time doing it. But yeah, the lacrosse den is probably the best spot to come shoot in Colorado for sure, but maybe all around. You never know.
It's pretty sick. And it's got like kind of like these ability to make these like different bays. But then when it's all open, there's just four corners with nets in them. So a couple times we've been in there, just us two, it's pretty fun. You just kind of rip the ball around. And there's also like columns that come down in the middle, like building columns. So you can like shoot around screens on the columns and stuff. It's a good time. If you need someone on the subject of teaching new things, if you need someone to give a worm burner session, Lomi's got the best low to low in the business.
I don't know. I know it's low to where. That's the idea. I don't know where it's going, but
low to unknown.
High bouncer clinic. Paulie's got it.
Yeah, Paulie, high bouncer on the run. We can airdrop you in to do that one. That would be a nice clinic.
Cheap. Yeah. Yeah. I'm in Denver a lot, so maybe extend the stay. You know, you never know.
Yeah,
Paulie, it's just a way to give back to the community. It's just community service.
Volunteer exactly. hours, still collecting them from high school.
Yeah, 40. Yeah, we're about like 38 hours still.
Yeah, Paulie, who's a firefighter, is never serving that community.
But I think just on the subject of that, though, like, first of all, it takes like some balls to teach lacrosse that way, because, like you say, everything in mostly every sport is just regimented, right? So again, like you say, you kind of get over the hump, but I think you look at a lot of sports now too, everyone's not trying to go the way you're going, but there's a huge need for like skill development out of the norm, if that makes sense. Like letting kids have fun, develop their skills in kind of like a natural or even like unnatural way, like in a fun, uncontrolled environment. And again, like, obviously you still need to learn like the game and this and that, but like the way you develop like those, you know, those skills, those hand skills is kind of just unconventional and just doing and just having fun. So I think that's a pretty cool way you're doing it, man. Cause again, like anyone can start a lacrosse camp or a club and just be like, here's the drills I did growing up. Here's what we're going to do. And everyone's seen them before. Everyone's done them before, but you know, whatever. I think the way you're doing it, I think that's super cool, man. It sounds really cool. I'm glad it's going well, because I think so many sports kind of need that type of training, like more laid back, fun, but you're still learning and still getting better. So it's cool, man. Congrats.
I appreciate that. Yeah, thank you. Seriously, I'm pumped on it. You know, it's like same point you're making. I keep telling these kids, I'm like, you guys think Jeff Teat learned how to use his stick by throwing overhand at the wall 1,000 times in a row?
Yeah,
it's like, exactly. No, he was in the backyard having a good time, like messing around, you know? So
yeah. Sure. Love it, man.
So well, yeah, go ahead, Danny.
Well, I was just gonna say, usually we kind of cap things off by asking guys the motivation or reason behind kind of why they pick the jersey number they wear. So what do you got for us?
So I actually have a terrible jersey number that you know, so sorry, but essentially I wore number 2 in high school because I liked like the low number, and I just picked 2 because I was like, I like 2, like why, might as well. And then when I got to DU, it was, they, you know, they gave us number choices, and I certainly didn't have any pull on what jersey number I was going to get. It wasn't like I could really demand much as a preferred walk-on, but 3 was there, and I was like, essentially our coaches were like, Tyler Pace just left, like not many guys want to like take his number right away. So then I was like, I'll take it, like might as well. So I took 3. I was like, sure, let's do it. I was like, I'm planning on being good. And then you know, at first I think they were literally like, ooh, we might be wasting 3 for a couple years, and then it panned out later on. But so figured that out, and then took 3 again in the PLL. And then for box, we had Garrett McIntosh was on our team, and he was wearing 3. So I was just like, let me just pack another 3 on there. That's pretty much the same. And that's like it. Yeah. So not the best number story of all time, but yeah.
No, that's pretty good. I like it. I like how you had 2. That's
probably love that. You lit up there, Paulie.
Number 2, so I like it.
That's good stuff. Well, we appreciate you sitting down with us, man. It's kind of cool. These are fun to do because you just get the story and the personality behind it. And I love that my favorite parts of all that were like not even the lacrosse part, like the
football tournament somehow.
Leaky and Squirt and Panko.
I want a piece of Panko.
There's a long list, man. You guys have, I didn't even tell you about Captain America, who duct tapes his hamstring to his leg every year before he plays. So
that's good stuff. But
we'll have to get you on again to just go. Maybe we'll
after the next leaky, the next one you play, we're going to do an hour podcast just on the whole leaky classic.
All right. That would be a good one. We'd have lots to talk about.
Love it, man. Well, bottom line, fuck Panko, and thanks for taking the time to sit down and chat with us, brother. We appreciate it.
Appreciate it, fellas. Thanks for having me on.
Best luck rest of the day, man.
All right. What a chat there. That was a fun one. Get a little look behind the curtain into Jack's personality, which seems that was the first kind of like time I talked to him. So seems like a real cool dude. Obviously, Donnie, you know him too. But anything else we want to kind of like chat about or anything that went on?
Also, this is just my personal opinion. There's too many auctions and not enough just jersey sales. We don't need to auction off the jerseys for charity every time. It's a great cause. We can also do that. But people just want to buy the jerseys. Just make the jerseys available for sale. I feel like league-wide, it's like we're just not great at it. It's like people want jerseys, especially the Marvel things. Those are fucking – like they're cool. Like let people buy them, and it shouldn't have to be like a $600, you know, memorabilia thing. Just that's just my opinion.
Well, the way – and again, I don't know. But like the way like manufacturing is now, you can like – pre-sell them, like you don't have to like care making 100 jerseys, like pre-sell them, then like okay, we'll turn them around in 2 weeks, like you should be able to do that, right? Yeah. Like okay, 50 people bought jerseys for $300, we make them for 100, at least we make $200 on it or whatever you're gonna sell them for, right? Like yeah. I don't know, you should be able to then turn around in 2 weeks and get it to them, or even like a week. Agreed. Right, like anyways,
what else? Is there anything else that's kind of going on in the league? Any like hot topic that we want to kind of touch on before?
I mean, just trade deadline, but like, who knows, yeah. Right? Like, technically, everyone's still in it, so it's crazy. Like, it's either going to be a dud or like teams are going to try and make moves. I don't know.
We're taping this on Monday. I thought we would have seen something today, honestly.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think I've seen anything.
The other fun thing, we don't need to. But we're starting to see PLL guys get tossed on the old holdout list, which is indicative of them playing summer ball, which is a very fun topic that we will keep Donnie out of because it's his employer. But, yeah, it's an interesting thing. I think it's going to be fun to see kind of how the PLL media handles it. From an insider source has told me that they've started – guys that are saying they're not playing, they've started to send them questionnaires to make them make a statement to the league that they're not playing because of summer ball, so that the league can provide those statements out to the media, which is kind of an interesting thing. But yeah, it'll be kind of a different summer. But I think, you know, I mean, obviously there's still a ton of great players. So, but it's a fun little debate to go back and forth on. But yeah, I guess other than the trade deadline, then obviously I think a couple weeks after is like the roster deadline to pick up like street free agents as well.
No, it's Wednesday. It's the next day.
Are you sure about that?
No. So
no, someone told me that, but
I think it's later.
Yeah,
I'll send you an email about it.
The roster deadline, it's weird because there's a roster deadline and there's a street free agent deadline and they're different. The roster deadline, I feel like here. Yeah, it's weird. So trade deadline is the 12th. Roster submission is due the 15th, but then you have till April 5th to sign street free agents. So that's just like with, I guess, people getting hurt and stuff. You have to add a couple more people. They have to be street. So, like, not on a team. So, yeah.
All right. I think that pretty much does it. Again, obviously, by the time this comes out, there could have been some moves that went down. So, that'll give us more stuff to talk about the following week and just kind of tell you what happened. But we appreciate
Hopefully one of us isn't playing for a different team by Friday.
Yeah, this could be an inception moment here. but you never know, I guess. But again, we appreciate you guys listening. We even had kind of like one of those fan events this after the game, and there was a lot of people in Rocks that just said they kind of use us as road trip material, which is cool. So I guess that kind of does it for 111, and we'll chat with you guys next week. Peace.